When I was a student midwife and a new midwife, we were in the late 70s in Scotland. And at that time, maternity care was full of routines in practice that subsequently we found out weren't necessary. So, for example, big antenatal clinics where women would come and they would queue up and wait for ages to see first a midwife and then a doctor. And then when they were in labour, women would lie down through their labour. During birth, they would all have an episiotomy, a cut to the perineum to, if you like, make the opening wider for the baby to come out. After the baby was born, babies would be separated with mothers into the nursery, and when they were feeding, they would, even if they were breastfeeding, they'd be given a bottle first, for example. So there were a lot of routines in care going on that were really quite difficult to accept as a midwife, because they just didn't seem appropriate or right, even though they were normal and routine.
So where did these routines stem from?
Well, what happened through the 20th century was an increasing medicalisation of care, and an increasing, if you like, control of birth. So birth moved from home into hospital, and once in hospital it became more of a medical procedure and less of a life event. And some aspects of that were very helpful in that, you know, in hospital things could happen, like if a woman needed a blood transfusion or an emergency section. But actually building that routinisation of interventions into everybody's care actually was harmful. And it was later, as research was done looking at these aspects, that we realised quite how much harm these routines were doing. But at the time when I was training, I was kind of taught them as the right thing to do. They instinctively didn't feel right to me at all, and I didn't like it. I didn't like the environment.
And did that spark your interest into going into research to try and find a better option?
Well, what happened was I just got very cross about it. I women were coming in and these things were happening, and they didn't know that they weren't right. And I didn't quite know that they weren't right, but instinctively they just felt unnatural and unhelpful and at times very painful. And I didn't know that research was the answer, but when the research job was advertised and I saw it, and it was to look at aspects of breastfeeding and lactation, and I thought, you know, it'd be really good to find out if what's happening here, you know, what the evidence base for it is. And so I applied for the job really out of that sense of anger or a wish to find out the right answers. And I found it almost from the start of that job, it was so enlightening, and I was captivated by the idea that you could actually test things out and work out if they were helpful or unhelpful. And I was working with such talented people. There were no midwives in research at the time at all. And my team was, I was working with an obstetrician and an endocrinologist, and together we were kind of asking a whole lot of questions and ran a number of studies looking at timing of feeds, looking at test weighing babies to see how much they'd had, looking at routines in care, and published a whole set of papers that actually became quite influential just in those very early stages of my career. Because what we were finding was that those routines in care that I was finding difficult, in fact, were causing harm. And so that was a really exciting place to be right at the beginning.
You are known as you're one of the people who are on the front line who transformed midwifery care in the UK. Have you seen the difference? Have you seen the transformation from when you first started as a midwife to the influence that you've had as a researcher?
It's completely different now. And what I love is the way we now teach students that they would never even think about the practices I was taught as a student. They would just learn not to time feeds. They would learn not to separate mothers and babies. They would learn not to do episiotomies unless they were necessary. They would learn that women should be mobile and walking about in labour. They would be learning evidence-based care right from the beginning of their career. That's not to say that it's all easy because it isn't. Because actually there are still people who trained in those days, and there are people who've kind of taken on, if you might like, traditional sorts of practices. So evidence-based care isn't yet running all the way through the healthcare system. But it's so much better than it was. And new students in every discipline actually are learning the importance of evidence and the importance of looking for that. And it's a transformation. And that is really nice to see. But it's still tough for those students going out into practice with those, knowing all of that and then encountering some practitioners who still don't want to work like that. So we've still got a lot of work to do.
One of the anecdotes I was reading online about you was that you got your PhD in the 1980s and then went to work in a clinical setting but had to keep your PhD hidden.
Yeah, that was really interesting. 1982, I got my PhD. I'd done it working full time. There weren't any PhD studentships at all at that time for people in my field. And so I graduated in 82 and went off back to full-time clinical practice. And yes, when I was interviewed for the job, the head of midwifery offered me the job on condition I didn't tell anybody I had a PhD. And I think even then I realised that it was because she didn't quite know what to do with me. And she didn't want me to go about thinking I was in any way special. Which, of course, I actually didn't in relation to clinical practice. I was going back to work in a labour ward and I was dead nervous the way anybody's nervous about going back to working in a labour ward after you haven't been there for a while. And the last thing I felt was special. I just wanted to learn. The fun bit of that story was that after 6 months of not telling people, which was really hard because people would say, oh, where have you been and where have you come from and all the rest of it, the way they do. But after 6 months, somebody found a paper I'd published in a journal and they just thought it was really funny. My colleagues thought it was really funny and nice in a good way. They were really pleased to think that a midwife could do a PhD. So it turned into a really nice thing, but it's quite hard if you think of anybody who's just graduated with a PhD. Normally you're feeling kind of really pleased and proud. At least my PhD students really like that feeling of just becoming a postdoc, and I had to put all that away and sit on it for quite a long time.
One of the barriers that you did face was in Canada as well. You worked there for a while, but while you were a registered midwife, you were actually teaching as a nurse. Why was that?
Yeah, I went to work in Canada. I had an urge to go and work abroad, and Canada's a lovely country, and there was a job in the university. And Canada at the time was the only developed country in the world without legal midwifery. And so I went out there, and the job then was teaching nursing. So I went out to teach nursing, community health and maternal and child health. But I was teaching nurses because, of course, there weren't any programs to teach midwives. And I got very, very involved in the Canadian movement to legalise midwifery, both in my province of Alberta but across the whole of Canada.
Why was midwifery illegal in Canada?
It, in a sense, it had never been made legal. So what's happened in countries that have legal midwifery is that at some point in their history, and for Scotland it's now 100 years ago, in Sweden it's 300 years ago, for example, a statute would be brought in to legalise the profession and set up a statutory framework. That had never happened in Canada. So it wasn't actually illegal, it was not legal. And there's quite a difference there. You're not actually breaking the law to practice. But if you did practice, you were practicing outside of any legal framework, and so you had absolutely no protection. No standards, no education provision. And therefore, if something went wrong, you'd absolutely no protection of any sort. And so it was not a safe situation for women.
Were there actually midwives practicing in Canada?
There were indeed midwives practicing in Canada, some of whom, like me, had trained in another jurisdiction. Others were self-trained. Others were apprentice-trained in other... they apprentice-trained each other in a way. So I became a co-founder of something called the Alberta Association of Midwives and became their spokesperson. I was kind of out there talking to the media a lot. And I was very well aware that members of this organisation were practising midwifery, and it was only, you know, a matter of chance, if you like, that something went wrong, and then we would be right up against it. So it was kind of living on your nerves a lot of the time, but really fighting hard for something that really mattered. Because why did it matter? The healthcare system in Canada was, and in some ways still is, highly medicalised, so women would be cared for by nurses without much of a training in maternity care, and by doctors. And doctors had to be there for the birth, and so just something very simple, like the doctor didn't get there and the woman would be ready to, you know, deliver her baby, but she wasn't allowed to push. That's incredibly hard. And very rude. All those routines I talked about a minute ago were still happening in Canada in the middle 80s. Lots of episiotomies, lots of control, lots of lying down in labour, all those kinds of things. And there was no way that that could get better for women unless the midwives were coming in to challenge the system. So leaping to the end of the story, midwifery is now legal in all Canadian provinces, but it's still quite a small profession. And although it's fantastic, the quality of midwifery in Canada is very high indeed. There's only a few hundred midwives, whereas in fact they need many thousands of midwives too.
Moving ahead, you started the Mother and Infant Research Unit at the University of Leeds. You started that in the mid-90s. What was the focus of the unit? What made you want to bring that all together?
Well, I'd spent the previous few years working in a wonderful unit in the University of Oxford, the National Perinatal Epidemiology Unit, that was a very multidisciplinary unit doing research across maternal and child health. And I was leading up a specific midwifery research programme within that. And when I went to Leeds to take up the research chair there, it was only the second chair of midwifery in the UK, possibly the world, and it was the first one that was really focused on research. I really felt that what I needed to do was set up a unit that was multidisciplinary but had a real strong knowledge and understanding of midwifery, where we could bring a whole lot of people together to do research, to really look at how you improve health and care with a deep understanding of the normal processes of labour and birth, not focusing on when things go wrong, but focusing quite a lot on how they can go right. And I wanted to build a programme that really did something that, at the time, there was not many places in the world really tackling research in that way, with that knowledge and that understanding. And so we built a research unit all on external research grants. There was very little financial support, if you like, internally from the university. We really had to raise external grants and build a programme. And that was really exciting. We got research money from research councils, from the NHS R&D programme, from places that weren't used to giving money to research in that field very much. So it was hard, but it was great. It was really exciting. It was a really exciting time as well. There was a lot of great work going on in maternity research across the world at the time, and it was a really great time to be building that kind of programme.
So in your opinion, what still needs to change about the way midwifery care is delivered across the world?
We've just published last year a series on midwifery in The Lancet, which is the premier health and medicine journal globally. And I've been working on that work with Professor Caroline Homer, he from UTS. And that series, compiling that series with people from 5 continents and 20 different countries and looking globally at midwifery, has really shown in stark relief the inconsistent way in which midwifery is practiced across the world. There's countries with no midwives. There's very large countries with no midwives. Brazil, for example, India, China stopped training midwives some years ago, and they're only now realising the impact that that's had and starting to bring it back in. So there are systems that are highly medicalised and with very, very high cesarean section rates, for example, and where women don't get that supportive and preventive care through pregnancy, birth and after birth that's so important for them. And then there's other countries where the system relies on much more community health workers or traditional birth attendants, which, helpful as that care might be, isn't nearly enough. So you've got opposites and extremes. You've got too many doctors at one end and very basic community care at the other end. And what midwifery does is bring in that care between those two extremes and do the preventive and supportive care that women need, as well as managing complications when they arise. And it is that women in all countries need, but in so many countries they don't have it.